Today's theme is to talk about Singapore's property price index.
I have clients that have been out on the market searching for very long. They can't find something that they want. So I think that is the number one key issues in the lender market.
I think I would say like 8 out of 10 people, right? Whether you allocated the funds for a property or not, this amount of money, right, will likely be spent somewhere
else.
In the resale market, you can still find a very good 2-bed, 2-bath with a yard above your shopping mall, above your MRT, at a very, very good quantum, which I think is still a very good comparison.
What project are you referring to? It seems like what I like.
It's like, what project is that? Are you trying to do subtle advertising?
No, yeah. I'm not.
She referring to her listing. Like,
yeah, yeah. Wow. I'm very, very specific. 764 square feet.
No, because
this is not a sponsored episode.
In today's market, right? 2x2x, very, very rarely you get to see a yacht. Not,
which project can you share?
She's purposely baiting you to ask that question. So, oh,
no. Maybe we cut out. Just want to know.
It is.
Sorry, what's your question, Josh?
When the PPI index move very high, but the GDP doesn't grow, does it mean that it's also like the bubble is growing? Because essentially, that is what is driving up the prices. But
people like to measure against GDP, which is like gross domestic product, right? Which is like the amount of economic activity. But I think they also like to measure against like income level.
Correct. Debt to GDP and then unemployment rate. So I believe all this will then add up to the equation of the bubble.
Okay, so today we want to go deep dive into property price index. And we just had the latest flash estimate for quarter four, 2023. And welcome to our new 2024 first episode of our NOTG Banter. Let's welcome everybody. Welcome yourself as well for joining us on this episode. So today we have our home team here. And so I think this is like the 1 year anniversary of our NOTG, right, guys? Anniversary.
Bento la. 1 year anniversary.
How come anniversary don't have any special thing, man?
We can use motion graphics, or
I thought like we'll have more than nuggets.
Yeah, the nuggets are here. Oh. But still nobody sponsors us nuggets.
Hi, McDonald's.
Josh today very talkative after the chicken pox.
Yeah, but inspired by just you recover from it's rare to hear somebody get chicken pox nowadays. What happened?
I think it's even rarer that when someone have chicken pox, it's still working.
Huh?
You need to recognize this.
this one need to cut off.
Working at home.
Working at home. Okay. Not going for viewings.
No, never. That's the beauty about the buddy system. We don't need to work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that why you never?
You always make your buddy work very hard for you.
Yeah. When I'm down,
how do you feel, chicken pox?
Okay, but 5 times a day medicine.
Last time my uncle kena chicken pox at I don't know what age, 30 plus. Then I heard that like he need to like 撞头 one. It's like very pain.
Yeah, so that's a myth. So today, that's also an objective. You want to debunk the myth. Not all the things are hearsay.
Oh, so it's okay. You felt okay. Right?
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay, great. Welcome back. Okay, anyway, for this new season of NOTG Banter, what we're going to do is that every banter episode, we will focus on one theme. And today's theme is to talk about Singapore's property price index. And let's have a look at the graph that just came out. So basically, this is the latest one that came out. And most of the time, there will be a flash estimate from URA first, followed by an official one, because usually our government will want to give everybody like a indication of what is to come before they tabulate the latest data, because there's always a lagged effect based on the transactions that are being caveated with Singapore Land Authority. So properties have a lagged effect because, for example, if you purchase a property, you put in an option fee, you have 2 to 3 weeks to put in an exercise fee, then there will still be another about 3 to 4 weeks to register what we call the transaction with Singapore Land Authority. So that's what happens at the back end, which is why transaction data are always lagged. So let's dive in today to talk about the price index. Maybe we have Joanne to take it away for us, just to kickstart like a little bit about how is the performance for the entire 2024 and also particularly the performance of 2023. Plus the quarter four performance just late last year.
So actually, if you look at this table that is on the screen right here, in terms of quarter four price index versus quarter three, in terms of the percentage change over the previous quarter, actually quarter four seems to be overall doing better. Of course, there are certain segments that still see a similar performance, for example, your non-landed property overall. But if you zoom into the landed, actually, you can see that compared to the previous quarter four has performed better lah, in a way, 4.5% versus the previous quarter in terms of a negative figure. However, if you zoom in deeper into the non-landed property, going into the table again, you can see the breakdown when we look at the different regions, CCR versus your RCR and OCR. So in general, CCR at 4.2, RCR, you see a slight dip compared to the previous quarter, -1.2, and OCR, as what we all expected, also still perform really well in the last quarter. So I think this also gives an indication of how the different segments have performed compared to the previous quarter. But if you look at the line graph, overall, the zoom out big picture wise, the property price index for our local market is still on an upwards trend. If you especially look at post-COVID, you see a sharp peak from say 2021 all the way to 2023. So I think this is also indicative of the health of the market, even with all the cooling measures. And I think in the last 3 years, in 2022, there were also a few rounds of cooling measures last year as well. The overall price index still remains strong and is on an upwards trend. And I think this also shows that a lot of people on the ground, whether or not you are in the market or not, still have a lot of confidence in our local property market.
Right. Thanks, Joanne. Yurong did a very interesting chart on tabulation of like the overall plus the volume. Yurong, maybe you can take it away just to share with us a brief on that.
Well, you don't have like your laptop.
My laptop is under repair at Apple.
I see you.
Kalina. Okay. Right. Come.
So I think usually for property price index, right, for me, I see the property price index as a form of emotional barometer of the market. Why do I say that? Usually from a very layman perspective, you know, like retail buyers, when they see the price index is a positive, then they will think, okay, the market is doing well. When they see that, you know, like it is a negative, then they will think, okay, the market is coming down. So that's how I see the purpose of like the property price index. So usually the property price and performance usually do not really correlate to individual property selection performance. So hence, you know, I don't really bother by it like too much. But how I would like to look at it is like I like to see things like that from a bigger data angle, where we span across more years, and that's one. And second thing is that we like to break down into the various segments. So for example, just now the property price index, it was broken down into like, of course, you know, like private property price index, we've broken down into like landed as well as non-landed. And non-landed, we can actually further break down into the three different market segments called rest of central as well as outside central region. So I think what we want to see is also how volume has actually change. So this chart basically is about the number of volume of transactions, right? So I think this is one of the indicators that I like to look at. So in terms of number of volume performance, I think in 2023, it is still overall going quite strong, 17,000 units of condos being transacted. And if you were to benchmark it to the earlier years, right? So it's quite consistent to the 2019, 2020, before the pre-COVID period, because like 2021 and 2022 is what we call like the accelerated version, right? So you have like a huge jump in terms of volume of transactions. So hence prices pick up very quickly. And of course, because of the sharp drive in pricing over the last 2.5 years, what we are seeing now is that I would say that in 2024, only certain micro segments in the market will still enjoy a certain form of accelerated growth, whereas the other segments will probably start to consolidate a little bit in terms of pricing. So, for example, in the HDB market, we already see that, okay, this year, I mean, 2023, price were very consolidated in a sense with a +1% kind of price increase. So if you just want to look at this in perspective, right, is that we can compare the overall volume versus the individual segments, right? What is the percentage increase and decrease over a 1 year span? So for example, if I look at 2013, so that was when total debt servicing ratio was implemented. The first half of 2013 was a super acceleration with regards to like pricing. The next half, second half, is actually because our total price index volume has dropped and shrink. And hence overall, the entire year, you will see that, for example, non-landed segment overall only move up by 1.9%. Right? And of course, then we see 2014, 2015, 2016, the entire market is adjusting based on the new volume of transactions because how the market has used a new way to grant loan and the buyer's affordability has changed. And so we see that the market took about like 3 to 4 years to sort of like adjust with regards to so that's why the price has been coming down and consolidated until end of 2017, where we start to see like en bloc trends picking up. So in 2018, that was like a strong positive. I think overall 2023, in terms of like non-landed side, based on flash estimate, I think we still did pretty well, 6.5%. I think overall this year will still be, I would say like a 3% kind of range. So that's my own personal, from an overall angle.
Yeah, actually I noticed, like I don't know whether you guys noticed, every start of the year, I don't know whether should we do this exercise or not. Like
prediction,
if you go, you go and Google, right? Recession 2020, recession 2021, recession 2022, recession 2023. Then you also Google recession 2024. Every year people will talk about recession. And it's like, I think it's like sometimes when we look at media, it's really like a clickbaity kind of news. It's like people love to hear negative news, right? I believe like start of this year, there's like tons of negative news as well. And then usually by end of the year, people forgot about what was being mentioned at the start of the year by a lot of analysts. Yeah. So similarly, I think like at the start of this year, there's been a lot of prediction about the fact that, you know, price is going to come down by various analysts. Some people say that it's going to be very, very low growth, maybe 1-3%. Maybe Joshua, if us, when you look at that 13.8 OCR last year,
right?
What do you think is going to be the performance of OCR this? So this 13.8, just now, I think Rong mentioned, is largely contributed by a lot of the new launches in OCR. I mean, what about resale market? What's going to happen to the resale OCR this year? Especially, I'm looking at properties like 3 bedders as below like 1.5 million in the whole OCR region. Will this whole thing get lifted up to the next tier? And also like, by the end of the year, what do you think will be the OCR increment? Or do you think it will like plateau?
So maybe you go to slide number 22. I think from there, we can have pictorial images of what Yurong have put up. So segregated by size, this is 750 to 1,000 square feet. So for context, I think for some of the resale, this may fall into the 2-bedder and then some of the 3-bedder compact kind of layout. If you take a look at the trend, I think what we can tell from all these charts, not just this one, as well as the following charts, right? Later we can see that the volume picks up during the COVID period. Then after that, right now, I think it has already started to come down a little bit. Probably January is a bit of an outlier because statistically over the past few years, January has always been one of the lowest transaction volume. But prices are still climbing up. And then as we move to the next slide, this will be the slightly bigger ones, 1,000 to 1,002 square feet. I would say this accounts to probably about 50-odd% for most of the condo configuration. So this, in terms of the overall volume, it has also come down by a little bit from about mid-2021 to 2024 as we are speaking. Prices are still moving up. I believe all these prices will also be telling a story as we move on to the next slide that is on all these new launches. So these are the new launches transaction volume as well as the prices. Average price point is hovering at about 2001 to 2002 PSF. So this is also driving up in terms of the overall pricing. But I believe when we have all these new transactions that start to hit, then naturally the overall resale condos will also start to hit a higher price. But if we take a closer look in terms of the balance units.
How many balance units are there?
I look at the past like 17 launches over the past 1.5 years to 2 years. Right now, on average, they are standing at about 30% over, close to 40% of outstanding units not yet sold. Of course, you haven't break down in terms of the layout, but this is, I believe the balance unit, right, will still continue towards, you know, probably towards the year end as we are still having some of the new launches up. So I think, transaction volume number one will start to slow down. A lot of people will then start to anticipate, will transaction volume dip also contribute to a dip in terms of the price? So let's take a look at, slide number 28. So the only time, right, when the transaction volume dip and the price dip, right, is only during the 08-09, the Lehman subprime mortgage crisis. And I think back then, the fundamentals in terms of the property market isn't that strong. So a lot of people, they can just over leverage, they can just buy, there isn't that, you know, any restriction. So I believe if all the cooling measures that was inserted over the past few years, even with the transaction volume that will dip, what I expect this year to be is it will probably have a very muted growth. It's not going to be like the past few years, probably 2% or 3% at max in terms of the growth rate that we are seeing this year.
So overall, you think that the price index will grow by less than 5% this
year? Yeah, yeah. I believe all segments.
I think he's referring to the overall private segment.
But if you take a look right at slide number 27, these are the landed prices. If you take a look at landed prices, right, this one, right, the transaction volume dipped by a lot since towards the tail end of 2023 to 2024 compared to like 2021. I would say this is more than 50% drop in terms of the volume. But prices are still moving up. So I don't think this will apply to landed per se. The 2 to 3%, I believe it will just be the mass market condos. I believe landed prices will outweigh the condos.
Right. Just like you're talking about the volume, is it, for landed?
Yes, the volume.
What about the volume for landed?
So from about 2021 mid-year until now,
okay,
I think the transaction volume has dropped by almost half.
Okay, maybe you can give some numbers to in terms of context. Like in 2021, there were 3,683 landed transactions. 2022, it was moderated to 2,080. So that is about...
You can look at yearly.
And of course, in 2023, we are at 1,490. Of course, 2021, the 3,000 over units is like a more accelerated kind of volume.
Yeah.
Because if you look at like, back in 2013, it was also at 1,394. So I would say that we are quite close to a certain form of like back to the pre-COVID kind of baseline.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, for this trending, I think this is available to all our audiences. You just need to go to Analyzer, click on Trend Research. Everybody can enjoy this tool for free. And you can actually click and toggle cooling measures or world events. So for example, let's say if you want to toggle cooling measures, the green color lines, they are all the rounds of cooling measures. And I don't know, what do you guys think? Like, does cooling measures now, I mean, after so many rounds, right, ever since 2019 until today, does it have an impact? Do you all think that actually cooling measures perk up the price or actually brings down the price?
Yes. So maybe I share.
Yeah.
I think that cooling measures, immediately once a cooling measure is being announced, it will definitely have a knee-jerk reaction. And I think the knee-jerk reaction is short-lived. But I believe the cooling measures will actually cause buyers that wants to buy into the market even more. Because they are afraid that if they don't take action right, then they will start to be priced out. Actually, that is already faced on the ground already. A lot of people, they feel that, hey, I want to quickly enter into a private segment because they are afraid that maybe the TDSR might change or further add downward pressure, and then LTV will also change, and then they will feel that, hey, I'm going to be, it's harder for me to buy.
Do you all think, I mean, like, what are you all hearing on the ground? I mean, do you all hear buyers being afraid? Not say being afraid, like, are people sort of like thinking, hey, will the LTV drop further from 75 to 70%? Will TDSR, we already had three rounds of readjustment to the stress test already. Now it's 55%, right, of income. Will it have a, I mean, like, and plus like, the last 2 years, there was like a further internal stress test going up to 4.5%.
Yeah, now it's already at 4.8%.
So do you all think this will be adjusted? Because there's two mechanisms that usually our authorities, they can play around with, like LTV. Immediately, you can create a dip in volume quite instantaneously.
Yeah,
people have to store another 5%. It's not easy.
Mm.
The TDSR is the bigger sort of like a mechanism to play around. What do you guys think? What are you hearing on the ground?
Our clients that are on the ground, both mixture of own-stay and investors. I think for the investors-wise, in general, I think the pool of investors who are out to speculate and you know, more for like a short-term flip, they are a bit more cautious in the current season compared to, let's say, during the past few years. A bit more cautious, but own-stay buyers are still going for it. For investors who are cautious, they are still out there looking for good products to enter into. But because of the 60% ABSD, a lot of the foreigners who are impacted, they still want to buy. But that kind of restricts their quantum. Now they have to look at a smaller quantum. But the interest is still there to enter into the market.
They're still willing to buy at 60% ABSD.
No. So they have to shift their quantum, their budget.
Oh, but they are willing to pay the 60%.
They are still looking.
So you have foreigner clients willing to pay just
smaller
reduce
quantum. Yes.
Wow.
So there are those few. But of course, I think bulk of it have also stayed out from the market. Maybe they have turned into rental. for the time being and waiting out to see whether or not there's any changes in the cooling measure. But my own personal take is that looking at how the big picture PPI is going towards, of course, we know that it's an indicator. Mm. There are still very micro movements that we have to pay attention to. Mm. But if I zoom out and look at the big picture, I do think that the price is still moving a bit too fast and high for the average Singaporean household, especially when you look at the non-landed. And my sense is that maybe there might still be, we are still expecting some cooling measures, but I do think it will hit the HDB market first. Because HDB market is usually the one that will create a lot more liquidity when the upgraders upgrade into your entry-level condos, then it kind of flows up with all the grants. It's the how the government also injects liquidity into the market by giving HDB BTO owners all your grants and subsidies and all that. And when the MOP, they are sitting on that 200-300K profit, they bring that into the private market as well. Mm. So my sensing is that there might be some cooling measures.
HDB but sellers cannot sell their house after MOP.
but of course, I think it will affect.
I think like one of the, I don't know, most painful and horrendous news of the century.
As in, any measures will not affect whatever that is already in place. So it will only affect new entrants. Mm. That's of course like to be fair to whoever existing owners who have fulfilled their MOP, etc.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's my sensing. Like maybe HDB market will see some changes soon.
Okay.
Because then that once the HDB market is controlled, actually you probably don't need to do much drastic changes to the private market. It will self-regulate.
Right. Who are your clients? I mean, like the foreign clients that they're willing to pay ABSD 60%.
So they are just they have been in the market, but again, then they are looking at smaller quantum. And when I say smaller quantum, it's really those like 1-2 bidders, which is the even with the ABSD, the pricing is still palatable. I think another reason is also because they want to take advantage of the currency movements, given how the global market out there, certain key markets are still a little bit more uncertain. Mm. They just want to enter into the Singapore market and sort of park their funds here. La.
Okay.
So, yeah. But of course, I do think the bulk of it have also stayed out of the market, go into rental or just taken a pause at the moment.
How about Yurong and Josh? Do you guys have foreigner clients that are hunting a property now with a 60% ABSD willingness?
I'm not working with any specific foreigner buyers buying with 60%. Of course, there are foreigners that came to see my listing and they are willing to
pay
with the 60%.
Wow. Mm. Interesting. I mean, like the latest statistic is that usually contribution by foreign buyers are usually less than 6% for private residential non-landed. And then we have seen like a drop to about 2-3% ever since ABSD was implemented. But I think sometimes, I mean, perhaps their spouse is already a naturalized citizen. We won't know. Or maybe they are from that 5 countries that are exempted from ABSD. Yurong, are you able to bring us through, like, you have this volume of landed? Let's maybe talk about landed first, then we wrap up landed, then we go into new launches. Let's talk about landed. We finish the landed PPI first. Anybody want to chip in on what do you guys think is the movement of landed property for this year, 2024? Has landed rose up too high? Do you think that, because landed is like the clear winner for the last 3 years after COVID, right? Look at 2021, 13%, 2022, 9.6%, 2023, 7.8%. Of course, there are certain segments right there. For example, like non-landed RCR, 16% in 2021. It just rose up so fast. But I think overall, in terms of maybe total balance, apart from OCR, landed seems to be still moving pretty strong. What do you guys think will be landed for end of this year, by the end of this year?
From the way I see, right, is that there is actually quite a big shortage of landed supply. I have clients that have been out on the market searching for very long. They can't find something that they want. So I think that is the number one key issues in the landed market. Naturally, the lesser transaction will also cause a huge spike in terms of the price. Why, right, is also because take, for example, if you're looking at the Bukit Timah area, the D10 area, a lot of homeowners, they are asking at way above the bank valuation because there is that severe shortage of supply. But people are still willing to buy into it. Even for what we say like a Cat 2.5 to Cat 3 inter-terrace in D10, Some of them are asking at 3,000 over PSF. But there are still buyers that want to take up because there is
okay,
simply...
Okay, hold a bit. Joanne, can you explain to our audiences CAT 1, 2, 3, 4 just very quickly for those who are joining us for the first time. Then we pass back to Josh.
Yeah,
Josh mentioned CAT 2 and CAT 2.5.
So here at PLB, we basically categorize the sort of different segments of landed homes according to the condition and the work that is required. So I think we have a lot of charts and tables on that. The CAT 1 basically refers to very, very sort of original condition homes. Maybe your single or double story at max that have not gone through any rebuild or recon in the last few years. So those are like your category 1. CAT 2 and 3 basically varies in terms of the amount of work done or how recent the renovation was done. So that is your CAT 2 and 3. CAT 4, these are usually the brand new, either by developers or the individual homeowner has gone through the renovation and is just now putting it out on the market. Brand new, for example, no one has ever stayed in ever before. So that's your CAT 4.
I think sometimes for landed properties, right, it might be very confusing for audiences because on the same street, they can see PSF varies from like 1,005 per square feet.
Yep.
Kind of difference. And reason why this is so is because landed is the only segment where the per square feet is based on the land size. And so when you are basing on the land size, right, you don't account for how much built up was there. So like one story, is it? So that's why in PLB, we actually created this framework to categorize home. So give you an example. Cat 1 is meant for rebuild. So let's say, I saw like a terrace in, let's say in 2023. The CAT 1 homes are at $2,100 per square feet. So these are meant to be torn down. So basically there's only land value. Category 2 homes are houses that it is all right. It doesn't have to be fully torn down, but potential buyers might want to come in to do what we call an A&A to probably add in an additional floor or expand outwards such that they can create more internal bedrooms, space. Yeah. Right. And of course, like CAT 3 are usually homes that are decently quite moving condition. Maybe they are, you know, like built in the last 10 years. You will only do some minor internal renovation. So that's CAT 3. CAT 4 will be for if you buy brand new from developer, you just move your luggage. Everything is new with lift, comes with pool. And the category 2.5 is more of like, okay, the structure most of the time, it is not maximized. Good to use, don't have to alter anything. Probably it has at least a 4-bedder, let's say for inter terrace. However, everything inside is very original. So probably you will go in and do a full facelift internally, pump in 4 to 500 kilograms of renovation. So that's like a category 2.5. So just here, give an example. Just now I was using District 15. So 2001 was category 1. There was this house. And the next house, same land size, brand new from developer, it was at $3,500 per square feet. So if you are like new to landed market, you might be shocked. Hey, how come two house, same location, same attribute, freehold status, same land size, how come one is so different, right? So usually for landed, it's always good to walk the ground. We use Google Maps. We compare transactions and see, you know, like what is the build up? What's the history of the transformation? So you have a better sense of like whether that per square feet makes sense or not.
I think for landed, it's actually easier to actually go and compare on the ground, if let's say you are a buyer, because you can look at the transaction, the house number, you can drive, you can see price, as in what?
Okay, so for if let's say audience that they don't have any subscription tools, they won't have the unit number.
So they can call us.
Nowadays, like a lot of, what I'm trying to say is that because of the fact that compared to condos, you don't know what's the renovation inside of the unit that was transacted. But if you look at a house on the external, if you subscribe to Square Foot or whatever, or you get from
us, the letter team,
You can just drive along the street, look at the exterior, the facing, and then you can try to rationalize why was this transacted higher than the other house or the same street.
Correct.
Yeah. Compared to like HDB condos or other units.
Of course, the caveat is that if you are looking at those smaller land size, then the PSF will be usually an outlier. Yeah. So for land size that are maybe the extreme small one, which is below 1,000 square feet, their PSF will usually be like the highest, then followed by like 1,500 and below, and then after 1,500,
So overall, Josh, what's your summation like for landed price index this year?
So I feel that number one, the smaller land size will move because a lot of buyers are kept by the quantum. So increasingly, I'm getting a lot of requests to look for single story, smaller land plot just so that they can enter into the landed segment. So I feel that landed market will still move, but you know, in very prime area, that is in the D10, those are buyers that have deep pockets that they can still buy into it. They have the free names. Some of them don't have the name. They just want to buy into it. That's towards the D10. Otherwise, there will be other buyers that are keen to look at the slightly smaller land plots or the up and coming district. The districts that are still you know, having a lagged effect. For example, the District 28, the District 16, those I feel there's a strong disparity to the 9-10, 19-15 district. Yeah.
Actually, I saw a handful of listings that are like between 3.5 to 3.9 million. And of course, when I look deeper into like all the listings that's available, these are really like the Cat 1 and Cat 2 homes. But I think these homes will start to clear out because this is like the last quantum that you can actually get into like a freehold triple.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. A lot of them are out already.
Yeah. So I mean, there are still listings available, but when you look at the photos, it's very clear. It's like Cat 1 home. You really have to tear down. But I think this will also be snap up.
Or those that are facing towards the main road one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say that this year, probably there are more buyers for the landed segment, right, who are more interested in the rebuilding angle. Yeah, because prices have moved up so fast and the disparity of Cat 1 homes versus like Cat 4 brand new developer homes, right, are so huge, right? And it creates a category of buyers that where they are shopping, they think, okay, there's no point to pay that to a developer and I cannot choose the design that I want. So in essence, if I were to engage my own builder, I can create that kind of design, architecture, internal renovation and layout, right, according to my wish. And hence, I think if they can find the right, you know, like Cat 2 home, they are like not too way overpriced, that's where they will pull the trigger.
Yeah. And I think also construction costs has already stabilized. So I think it's a good time to talk about like rebuilding and all that. We have this episode at West Coast Corner Terrace. You can actually... we can put in the link right here. Basically, it's on Property in Brazil YouTube channel. That is the episode that we walked through all landed to talk about all the do's and don'ts, what to avoid when it comes to rebuilding so that you can have like a very good experience. So watch that. We walked through with our builder. Yes, Joanne, you're trying to say something.
Yeah, I think I agree with what George and Yvonne mentioned as well. In terms of the demand for landed homes for this year, I think another reason why the inter-terraces will likely be the one that's more popular is also because if you look at the non-landed segment, a lot of the 4 or 5 bedders, penthouses, condos, the prices have also gone up a lot. And that makes the disparity to your next category, which is your next sort of more premium status, your landed class. Disparity is too close. So this creates the confusion for a lot of buyers to have a dilemma. Should they go into your penthouses or should they just spend, just top up a little bit more? You can enter into inter-terrace. Probably, I think at Cat 3, if you are okay with the OCR region, you can still find very good inter-terraces with huge land plots, 2,005 square feet. The condition, maybe Cat 2, 2.5, but if you're okay, you don't need to max out with lift and all that, you can still proceed and continue with that 3 level, just do like an internal facelift, like what Yvonne mentioned. That still sort of gives you a very good opportunity to enter, given that the condos have also risen up a lot as well.
Give some examples, like penthouses, you're talking like what quantum?
Penthouses, maybe like 3 to close to 4, whether you're in the OCR or RCR region.
What are some of the latest projects you have seen, like the listings that are calling this price?
I saw like Park Vera.
Okay.
Because previously we had another buyer who was looking at the penthouses there.
Sure. Do you transact?
No, not.
Okay. What else?
Didn't happen in the end.
Yeah, Park Vera, somebody will be very happy.
I think Grandeur Park. Not Grandeur Park. Grandeur 8.
Grandeur 8, Bishan.
Oh, okay. Yes. Penthouse.
Yes. Penthouses.
3, 4 bedder.
Yes, correct. We are not talking about comparing the same region. Of course, RCR, your inter-terraces definitely will be at a higher quantum. But if let's say you are okay with the location-wise, even at OCR, you can still find very good buys. Freehold.
That's why in terms of like, I think like OCR location, right, for landed, there are some districts that are pretty popular, like Grand District 16, right? Just outside of the RCR region, you have like your district, like for example, 19, where your Kovan, Serangoon, that cluster. You are just at the start of OCR. So you are not sacrificing too much in terms of the locale, but you actually get a lot more space. And that's also the reason why actually a lot of landed owners that I speak to, they are, even though what they're currently thinking is actually higher than what like the current transaction price is, but they're very confident that eventually, probably in the next 9 to 12 months, right, it will reach there. Rationale being, rationale being, right, is because, right, they have also been observing all like the new launch price transaction. And then they find that, hey, I have so much more space.
It doesn't make sense for me to call this price.
Yeah, and hence, you know, like that's where it sets that expectation, right? So I think like pricing direction is always a tug of war, right? Eventually, the sum of the parts, right, whoever is more persistent will win. Whether is it this, the demand is stronger, whether is it the supply is like sellers are stronger. Yeah, so I think like for landed, I think those inner terraces, lower quantum, I think like it's a good transition and a good fit. I would say like for easier to bridge the gap from both sides.
Yeah, I think what Joanne has just mentioned, right, in terms of disparity. So disparity effect is like a framework that we do in PLB to see from this product, moving on to the next product, is that substitutional gap getting closer? So why is it that sometimes certain products have a close affinity is because they cater to the same type of demographic. So usually, let's say if a family that's looking for a 4-bedder or 5-bedder, they will usually hunt for like a landed or maybe like a penthouse that has 4 to 5 bedrooms. And usually the demographics will have that kind of dilemma. So when the price gap becomes too close, people might want to jump onto the what we call the higher status property. So for example, let's say a 99 years penthouse is like 3.5 million. Then maybe they will think twice, like, should I go for a 3.8 million inter-terrace cat one, but it's freehold 999. So that's what we call a higher status disparity gap. But of course, I think when it comes to that strategy, it also requires two perspectives. Number one is that maybe you get something at 3.678 million, cat one, you still will need to, at some point in time, rebuild that or do an A&A and pump in another 1.5 to 2 mil. And thus, your total investment might be 5 million or 5.2 million. But the two perspectives that you might have to rebuild at a certain point in time, but you can also treat that as a pivot home. So pivot home is also another framework that we have, is that you buy first. And even if, let's say, currently you do not have the funds to rebuild it, you can just renovate it with maybe 300 or 200,000 first. Stay in it for about 2 to 3 years. When the land PSF appreciates, then you think about, do you want to sell it? Do you want to extract equity? Do you want to take a reconstruction or rebuilding loan? And you use this as a pivot home. You enter into the market first. Enter into the higher status property first. Let it appreciate. Because a higher status property, when the substitute property has moved up too close, they tend to flee up and escape faster. So that is what Joanne has just mentioned in terms of disparity effect.
I have something to add on. I think like just now what is a lot that's being covered, right, regarding like lender and let's say the penthouse pricing disparity is getting close, right? Okay, I think this is of course, you know, like from one angle is like what we call like for either you are a own stay buyer or whether you are what we call like a hybrid buyer. Own stay buyer means, okay, you're very clear that you need more space.
Yeah.
Right. So of course lender offers you that. A hybrid buyer meaning that you are buying for own stay now, but you want to have that investment engine in your portfolio. So if you are in the combination where you need the space, and I think like lender will be a very clear cut long-term performer in your portfolio if you know how to choose the right one using, we have this framework called like the RUO, IPA and IBA.
21 things to avoid.
Yeah, 21 things to avoid in terms of price acceptability, you know, like in terms of your exit strategy for your landed purchase. So this will be a clear-cut winner for long-term because you already have that immediate need of space. However, if you are a hybrid buyer or investor, right, where you don't need to occupy the space, so sometimes the right condo investment in the next 10 years will actually outperform your landed holding. From what angle? Meaning that, for example, landed, he has a lower rental yield. So if you're not physically occupying and you're paying somebody to fund that property, right, your yield is generating at a lower rate. Second thing, a landed property requires higher maintenance because a condo will only maintain what is interior. But for a landed, of course, you need to take care of like roofing works, etc., to make sure that you don't need to have like a 10-year overhaul of the roof because it doesn't get maintained regularly. So all these are all like high expenditure. And I think importantly is like things like cash flow, which is very important from an investment angle. So hence, if we were to compare just from a pure investment angle, sometimes the condo portfolio can actually outperform the landed one vis-a-vis after we deduct some of the expenses that are in play, right? So usually for own stay, very clear cut, landed home will be the better investment long term. If it's a pure investment, then we have to make some more deeper kind of analysis for you.
Yeah, and of course, I think end of the day is like sometimes it's also hard to balance, right? Because like now names are so precious. Mm. For some families to buy landed, they have to use two names. Mm.
Most need to use two names.
Yeah. And of course, like they will always have that dilemma, facilities, no facilities, maintenance, mode of maintenance plus lifestyle and stuff like that. And I face a dilemma as well because my wife will just always tell me that she don't want to have rats and like cockroaches running into her house. Okay, because she grew up in a landed before. So she understands. So,
they're not all landed.
Yeah, of course. Well, you can do pest control, all that. But what I'm trying to say is that when it comes to your own stay property, the both husband will have to click. Then you can make the decision. So we can also understand from our client's perspective that even though sometimes we advocate certain kind of properties, end of the day, husband and wife must be happy doing that. You cannot 100% make it as like just an investment thing and then end up your family is not happy.
Happy wife, happy life.
Yes, of course, definitely. Okay, great. Let's move on. Let's move on to, I think let's talk about, we talk about landed, right? Let's talk about new launch first. Mm. Do we have any data on new launch in terms of PPI? But meantime, let's have like a short commercial break because this year for NOTG, we're going to do something very fun. We are launching our first ever Telegram community channel. So we're going to call it like NOTG Telegram community channel. And with that, I'm going to invite our new channel manager, Grace, to come up and give us an introduction of what this Telegram channel is about. Let's welcome Grace.
We should call it NOTG Talk Talk Line.
Hey, where's Grace? Is Grace here? Okay, come.
Can we name it NOTG Talk Talk Line?
Yeah. Okay, so we decided to open up a new Telegram channel because we're always receiving a lot of comments on our YouTube channel. People are, you know, like leaving a lot of comments about the things that we say. So we wanted to bring everyone who is, you know, curious about the real estate, real estate market, curious about everything that we have to share, bring everyone together on a Telegram platform where you can send us messages directly. So of course, I think we'll be adding in our presenters, our core team as the admins, where we can chat there as well. But I think
Grace will chat with you
24/7. No expectation to reply because everyone's very busy, but I will see your messages. And we can also, you know, you can also suggest there things that you want to discuss and things that you want to chat about. Okay, so what we're also going to do this year is that we're going to create... We haven't briefed the team on this, actually. Yeah. Okay, so we're going to create personas that you will be able to follow throughout the year. So, for example, we'll create personas of varying, marital status or varying income levels.
What is varying marital status?
For example, we're going to create like... Okay.
Married? Not married. You're in a situation.
So, for example, maybe we'll create like 4 to 5 personas. Maybe persona number one is like single professional, yeah. Right? Peter, early 30, but cannot buy HDB, earning a certain level of income, but aspiration to own property. Then maybe we'll have like John and Mary, young couple, bought into a BTO, just MOP. So we'll create like different personas. Then every time when we talk about like different market trends and all that, we will reference personas. So it's easier for all of us to follow us.
So right? John and Mary should do this. Peter should do this.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's also like based off, I guess as we go along, for us, for our audience, you'll also be able to relate to certain profiles. So maybe every time we mention like John and Mary, you'll be like, hey, that's a pretty similar income to me, a pretty similar status. So we'll try to build also not just the very core attributes, but maybe also in terms of their mindset, right? Like maybe they have certain preferences.
Concerns,
or maybe they have, you know, they're more risk averse, or yeah, they have aspirations for, let's say, moving to a ladder, things like that. So we'll build these personas and introduce them throughout these episodes. Then we'll build them throughout the year, so everyone can have like a more relatable experience.
Yeah, everybody can grow with them.
Yes.
I'm excited to meet John and Mary.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Peter.
Okay, thanks.
Also, thanks, Grace. Give a round of applause, please.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Okay, so we'll talk about landed PPI. Now let's move to HDB PPI. Joanne, do you think that actually this 4% is being attributed to the 15-month ruling?
Do you know that we reached the anniversary of the 15 months?
Yes, we just reached. Yeah. What do you guys think? I mean, like, of the 15 months impact. Okay, maybe let me explain the 15 months impact. So it was introduced, I don't know which month it was. Was it September?
September 2021.
Okay, so when that news... 2022. Okay. So when
September
that news,
2022,
yeah, when the news was being released, right, it shocked the market because technically it means that if you were to sell off a landed property, you sell off a condo, you cannot immediately buy a HDB resale. So in the past is that you can immediately buy, and it's very important because some people, they are in the defensive stage. They want to sell off a landed or condo and they want to pay off a HDB and they just want to like maybe pay it off and retire. So this created like a shock in the market because one of the reasons why this was introduced was because there was an escalating upbeat in pricing. That means there was price bidding for big units like EMs, EA, Jumbos, five rooms, especially like prime areas or so. So because people who sell off their landed and condo have very high purchasing buying power, especially cash as well. They can fully pay. So when they go into the market, no matter like example, the COV, if it's just by another 10, 20, 30,000, they can pay off. So I think there's data and the authorities really want to, I mean, cut this in terms of the escalating COV and stuff like that. So,
and also $1 million flat transactions.
Yes, $1 million flat transaction, which flooded the news. So there's two categories, right? So basically, 15 months apply to everybody, except if you are above 55 years old, you do not need to cater to 15 months if you are buying 4 room and below. But if you want to buy 5 room and above, you have to wait 15 months, even if you are 55 years old. But for everybody else that's below 55 years old, you cannot buy anything within 15 months. So you have to go and rent first. Okay, what do you guys think? Was it because of the 15 months that it caused like a double-digit growth from 17%, 10% to 4.8%? What do you guys think? And do you think this year it will be flat, it will be negative, or it will still go up?
I'm going to give my view first.
Yes.
Look at slide number 31, yeah, or you can go to 32. So this is, we have two different charts. One is 5 room and below. One is above 5 room. So even with the 15 months cooling measures that was put in place, what we notice is that there are still a lot of buyers that can enjoy the grants that are available in the market. And then they are still buying into the HDB because then HDB becomes it fulfills a few criteria. Number one, it gives them the space. Number two, it is still significantly cheaper than a private residential project. So if you look over here, it has been growing. The number of transaction volume has more or less been the same. So I think these are really catering to buyers that really want to have a roof over their head. They want to kickstart a family, but the prices are still...
This is 1, 2, 3, 4 room, right?
Yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4 room.
Okay.
Yeah. Then if you go to the next chart, which is 5 room and above, yeah, the prices are still inching upwards. So I don't really see there's a huge impact in terms of curbing the prices.
What do you guys think? I mean, Rong and Joanne.
Okay, so I think number one, the prices escalated not so much because of like private property owners switching to the HD market. Like, yeah. I think the main thing is because COVID has delayed in construction process and the BTO application, right? Okay, there are delays in BTO projects completing, right? And of course, then that also delays in the future launches. It takes up to like 5 years, 6 years, you know, to be able to deliver your keys. And so hence, there's a dramatic change with regards of demand where people cannot wait as long. And hence, it was directed back in terms of all this demand, market, right, to the HD resale market where it is more immediate. So when we saw the huge price growth, 12.7% in 2021, that was attributed to actually we have about 50% increase in terms of volume transactions compared to the earlier year in 2020. So naturally, where did this volume of transactions come from? Mainly from all these BTO delays, as well as I think also in COVID, there was also more thought process of needing additional sizing because now you have to work from home. And because of all the first batch of BTOs, when we first launched our BTOs, right, we have a lot of BTO launches back in like 2011, 2010. The first really huge batch of NOPs was in 2019. So when, if let's say, for example, you have existing HDB and you are profitable, it's easier for you to consider switching the profits within the HDB segment to get a larger size. So basically, when you have like you have a profitable like HDB, let's say from a BTO, it's easier for you to think of switching to a bigger resale flat because you are just rolling your profits and then you can give more space, you know, in that COVID environment to your family. So that's one. Thirdly, also because of restrictions of viewing during COVID, I think that also create, right, that, okay, that there were like different times, like there was like, okay, 5 unique visitors per home per day. And so it becomes like a bidding process, or you need to quickly commit. If not, you will miss out this unit and all that. So all this escalated to, you know, like price growth very strongly in 2021 and 2022. Mm. Obviously, when we implemented that 15-month kind of to restrict private buyers who have sold off their private property to come back to the HDB market, is because the authorities also have seen a lot of multi-million dollar HDB flats that are being transacted. 369 somewhere in, I think, like 2022. In 2023, was about 460 units. And so because of the price spike in terms of private property in 2021, right, I think it was also part of that measure, right, to ensure that private property owners who have sold their properties, they have a deeper pocket, they can pay more COV. They want to ensure that in an already escalating environment, they want to take away the lowest hanging fruit of control in the hopes of trying to moderate and slow down this price increase. Which I think 2023, that result has happened. But more because, not so much of the cooling measure of 15 month without period, but more because that BTO, the construction delay has been resolved. And hence, now people they find that stability. Okay, they know that the number of years has been reduced, a lot more launches, more choices. They don't have to really just commit to the resale property.
What HGB has talked about, I think, in the last couple of, last 12 months, is that now BTO more or less within 4 years will be completed, right? Mm. So I think that sent a lot of assurance to the market that, if I go for a BTO, I have the assurance that it's back to a normalization construction phase. Let me just share with everybody this story. So yesterday I came back from a chit-chat session. Very interesting. Wow, this is life update, man. Okay, that's pretty good. Okay. It's a very interesting story. So our clients, Gordon and Yvonne, we did a chit-chat session because Alan Sherrill, Mel Chan sold off their EC at The Vales, three bedroom. And they bought a penthouse at Casa Rosa. So the episode will be out in a couple of weeks' time. Okay, so they share with us that in the year 2017, which was about 6 years back, they actually gave up their BTO. And because they felt that the wait might be too long. And then they walk into the show flat of The Bills for the balance unit. And if on hindsight, just looking back at that decision, right? Now this is the year 2024. They just moved into their penthouse. So they move into their penthouse already. And this penthouse is like $2 million. They sold off The Vales at, I think, what was the price of The Vales? That's like probably about 1.2 plus, about there. Okay, sold off Vales. And they bought The Vales at, I think, about 700 over 1,000. That time. Yeah. So this is like 700. Okay. And they were saying that if they were to continue with that BTO, at this point in time, they would have just stayed in the BTO.
They still 3 years.
Yeah. For 2 years only.
They're still staying there.
Yeah. So if they didn't make that decision back then, in 2017, they will have been still staying in the BTO for 2 years, as they still have 3 years to go, which they were only MOP by 2027. And 2027, then they can make the move. So actually now they have already they have already gained in terms of like the appreciation, right? And then they have moved on to like a bigger problem. They have already technically expanded their portfolio in terms of valuation.
The gross proceeds, if I'm looking at the right unit, right? It's a 904 square feet. So a lot of people, maybe they will be thinking, hey, should I buy into a compact three beta? So I think this is a good example. They bought it in about 2017, then they sold it in 2023. Gross proceeds is at about 500,000. Yeah, but of course, when they buy into the EC, at that point of time, they also have to fulfill the EC eligibility criteria. That is the area.
So back then, when they gave the BTO, right, the criteria was at 12,000. It have not went up to 14,000. So similarly, when they bought the EC, they also have to appeal because they overshot a little bit, but they managed to get it. Okay, so the interesting round of this story is that when they wanted to sell off The Vales and go for the penthouse, they actually were struck with a dilemma because their initial budget, and we talked about this in the whole chit-chat session, it's going to be launched as well. They said that their initial budget was 1.5 million. But then they have to go up to about 2.1, 2.2 million for the penthouse. And I asked them, what was the decision matrix? And guess what? It was actually from their parents. It's not that their parents supported them, but the parents shared them one word and say that,
"Chiong."
Okay, because this is rare, right? Usually advice from like external is that,
don't take risks.
Yeah. But actually the husband's mom, right, told them that if you are young and you're working hard in your career and you're doing okay and you want to continue to work hard, then go for it because you are young and your income level will increase. So when I heard that, I was shocked and I asked them like, hey, why was there this story? And then they shared me, of course, for the background. Of course, watch the episode for the full story.
So they shared one paragraph, not one word.
So yeah, not one word.
one sentence. One sentence of inspiration from the mom. Okay. Yeah, and it was basically from the encouragement that they wanted to take the leap.
Yeah. Actually, it's a very positive affirmation.
And after that, right? No, okay. And then they shared one thing, which is exactly what we always talk about as well. So now I ask them, after you move into a penthouse, how do you feel? How do you feel in terms of like the monthly installment level? So they said that actually after they move in, they feel that it's okay. Yeah. And they will work hard to, and it's not like overstretching. It's just that they manage to expand their mindset a little bit. Yeah. So in the previous NOTG episode, solo version, I also shared that sometimes property purchase is a little bit about training our mind as well. It's like a force. Kind of discipline to force save and make it happen. So yeah,
I think I would say like 8 out of 10 people, right? Whether you allocated the funds for a property or not, this amount of money, right, will likely be spent somewhere
else.
It's either it is a pure entertainment purchase, that and it'll be gone, or it could be just, you have reallocated in some form of savings, it's not in your bank account. But maybe you decide now to save your property. Maybe you're allocated in other instruments like stocks and crypto. And then of course that the performance will depend on your own suitability with regards to your own personality in managing all these investments. Right. So I think sometimes property people will consider the monthly installment as a form of expense. Right. Of course, I think the right mindset will be, we definitely understand that monthly installment, the expense is the interest component.
Yeah.
Which is a beauty. If let's say today it's a pure investment, we're renting it out, the tenant will fully cover and take care of the expenses. But as for own stay, then you can treat the expense, right, as long as you own something, there's a consumption element, right? So it cannot be for free. Then the other part of a principal paid, right, is like a form of forced saving. So if you choose the right property, then this forced saving will be able to compound from there. And it's the best form of dollar cost averaging because you will never miss a payment. No matter the market is going up or going down, so you are taking the emotion out of the entire equation, which is why it is a bit harder, like I would say, that to invest right in like say the other kind of like more liquid kind of markets. Because when the price go up too fast, I also scared to buy. When the price come down, I also scared to buy. Right? There's always reasons to stop myself from not following that dollar cost averaging plan.
Just now before the start of the recording, we were talking about, Joanne was talking about, hey, PPI doesn't really represent most properties. I mean, it's like it's basically if you go to Realist URA, it looks at stratified hedonic regression approach. It's like a median. There's a lot of calculation based on the size, characteristic, region, and stuff like things. Of course, it's a representation of the overall performance, but I think when it comes to like country versus country, it is a must to have this kind of indexes because if not. Like we wouldn't know whether this country, in terms of overall property price trend, is it going up or going down? Definitely it has an impact on consumers' mind, right? We will say, oh, it's going down. Maybe I really don't buy now. Wait for it to bottom up. Everybody wants to wait for the bottom. If it's going up, like what Euro mentioned, you're also scared to go in, right? So I think end of the day, the PPI is a reference point, but individual projects, individual kinds of properties have really different characteristics. It really needs to be deep dive. Yeah, so maybe Yurong and Joanne, y'all can run out a little bit about HDB. What do you think this year will be the performance of HDB PPI for 2024? Single digit or double digit, or it will be flat?
2 to 3%, I guess.
2 to 3%.
Okay, do y'all think just now we talked about September 2022, right? So those people who have waited 15 months can now come back already. Yeah, what do y'all think?
I think for that cooling measure, I have seen how it has impacted my sellers who belong to that category of larger EAs or EMs or 5-room. They have basically just taken a listing off the market and chose not to
sell their private.
No, HDB.
Oh.
5-room EA or EM. due to the cooling measure.
Also, they don't want to sell because they want to wait for those buyers to come back.
Yeah. Oh. Wait, I mean, that waiting for the buyers to come back is one aspect, not the most important factor. The other thing is also because
people wait to buy, they wait to sell.
This is interesting.
Yeah, their internal family plans, they also have to still sort it out. Like, what is there going to be their replacement? Which is why I think, if we go back to the chart that we pulled out just now, the one that Josh flashed, maybe just to share a bit while we pull up the slide. For my that particular case, the seller was also in a stage where they are downsizing from their larger flat, which is why then we advise them to, not that we advise, they also personally wanted to take a pause on their sale. And I also noticed, because the announcement was made in September
2022.
So there is a slight dip in terms of volume. But of course, we don't attribute that 100% to the cooling measure.
Yeah.
But I do notice there's a slight dip. But the interesting thing is that if you look at the pricing, which is the line graph in orange, the pricing still remains strong. So I think the sentiments of the remaining sellers who belong to this category, their sensing is that even if the, you know, this small buyer pool has temporarily been taken out of the market, I still stick with my price expectation. Because then my next price, whether am I upgrading into a condo or whether I'm downsizing, my replacement cost is also not going down. So, and if they are in a position where they can still wait out for the sale to move out, or for the buyers to come back, they are in a position to do so because the pricing or the next place of replacement is something that is on their mind as well. Yeah. So that is what I've seen some of my clients, their thought process lah.
Okay, I have one question. Do you all think that actually this 15 months ruling will cause certain 4-room flats to move up in a accelerated fashion compared to 5-room? For example, let's say at Pinnacle at Duxton. Will there come a stage that some of the 4-rooms will actually be very close to the 5-room pricing because certain buyers that have sold their landed or private and they really want to move into the town area, they have cash and they don't want to pay for 15 months rental, they don't want to wait, they don't want to move 2 times. Do you think this will perk up the 4-room price to be close to 5-room?
Actually, that has already been the case.
That's already started to happen.
Yeah. Especially like if, let's say we take a look at Pinnacle and Duxton, right? Actually, if you take a close look in terms of the size configuration, right? I think that one is fundamentally the layout issue because the 4-room and the 5-room, right, actually is not a huge difference. But the classification is just there for a 4-room and a 5-room. And then hence that some buyers, they just say, okay, actually it's not a huge difference. And then they just buy into the 4-room because they can qualify for that ruling. And then, you know, of course that kind of push out the prices. But I don't think the lender or the private downgraders really are contributing to the rise in terms of the overall price. Yeah.
So I think like these people coming to the market will not move overall prices too much significantly.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, like in terms of like the individual segments, like, you know, like the more centrally located bigger room types, right? So they might be like the stronger benefiter, you know, like from this first 15 months of measure completing. So of course, this is not like a floodgate, right? So 15 months, this thing is like taking in stages. Not because not everybody sell in September and then hence now, you know, like in January, there's a floodgate.
Yeah.
It is just a very progressional basis, like a droplet here and there on like a month-to-month basis. But I think the other fuel for like the closing gap of potentially 4-room and 5-room is because of like the motivation from grants for first timers, right? So 80K for 4-room flats, if you want to go to 5-room flat, that will be $50,000. Yeah, so that is another motivator to potentially have more consideration. Maybe people are more swayed towards wanting to consider 4-room flats as well.
Okay, great. Let's move on to condos, PPI. Anybody want to take it away? What do you guys think will be the wrap up for this year for condominiums?
So what did you estimate in the webinar?
I didn't estimate, but actually based on my own
sense. 第六感.
No, it's not 第六感. It's research, right? But actually, to me, I feel that the amount of like supply is still under supply. The rationale is that I always like to refer to that supply inventory chart is like we have 360,000 to 370,000 per year. We're increasing. I mean, even for this year, if you look at GLS for first half and second half, per year, averagely, we always increase by about 10,000 units for new launches. So we can take it that last year we had 360,000 condo apartment units overall in Singapore. This year we're going to have 370, next year we're going to 380, 90, and then we hit 400. But in totality, 80, 586,000 are already owned by companies, PR, foreigners. So that is like, to me, is like an amount that is stuck because they bought before the 60% ABSD. So if we take that out of the market, we're left with about 200,000, maybe 280,000, 290,000 revolving kind of like volume among Singaporeans. So I feel that in totality, even if we look at the unsold units, maybe we can have a look at the slide of the unsold units.
This one, new launches.
Yeah, new launches. I mean, like people will always think, hey, you know, last year, new launches, so many projects not fully sold, right? But actually, if you look at the total unsold, it's actually very little because let's look at data number one. Unsold units in launch private residential projects, which is in totality, data number is 3196. So based on last year, up to Q3, there's only 3,000 units that was unsold. And these were the launch ones, which I think eventually over this and next year, it will start to clear out. Because naturally, new launches will be like the big brother of PSF. The resale owners actually, if you think about it in like, we call it that relational approach. Like example, if you own a resale condo, you see opposite, right? Like I just came from Urban Vista. And you look out of the window, you see
Scenica.
Transacted averagely 2,000. Okay.
People got more.
Actually, internally, you as an owner, you are laughing one. Yeah, internally, you are laughing. You are happy. Like, okay, let the big brother push up my price here. Because why? They bought at 2,000, they're going to sell at 2,223 where it will be. Example, Park Esta, your favorite project, right? Because you have a lot of clients. How much did they buy?
5,005 PSF.
5,006.
Which is a good units.
Now, transacting TOP project, how much? 2,000.
2,001 already.
Okay, so they earn about 500.
This year, my favorite project is Penrose because now my Penrose investors are offloading this year.
Okay, so any resale owners that are owning condos beside all these new launches, they internally, they are laughing. they are happy, right? They're happy in a sense. So what I'm trying to say is that basically the new launches PSF are the big brother of new benchmark pricing. And because of this, the existing resale condos, they will naturally raise their expectation of asking price should they want to sell. So this will always be like okay, let the big brother move first, resale move. Big brother move, resale move. And I think when you look at this, the unsold units will eventually clear. It's because when the resale move, this new launcher will start to make sense. Then it will clear out and move. So I think naturally 3,001 to me is not a lot. It's technically like, it will just naturally start to clear on its own as people want to upgrade and all that. Okay, but of course, recently there's some articles talking about our buyers backing up, right? Example, HDB upgrades find it very difficult to upgrade. If they find it difficult to upgrade to new launches, they will upgrade to resale first. Yeah. So, but naturally, I think less than 5,000 units, I think is easily absorbable. What do you guys think?
I think generally wise, I think for like the private market, like because the location pricing is so widespread, right? So, they actually, individual micro segments will behave very differently. So maybe you just break it down into like the few big tiers. So for example, number one, if let's say the property right is of like a higher quantum, let's say, you know, like above $3 million, then I think it's very important which district that you are in comparison to the landed inter-terraces right in that district. If the price disparity that you are entering, let's say, you know, like I'm in a certain district, I'm $3 million for like a condo, and the inter-terrace there is $3.5 million. So that disparity gap might be too small, and you will see that probably there will be more buyers that want to funnel to the landed side. But let's say, for example, in areas like District 10, District 15, where, maybe District 10, right? Inter-terraces, let's say $6 million. And hence, you know, like a $3.5, $4 million condo can still make sense because the disparity is there to be in the same location to get in 1 kilometer of certain good schools.
Yep.
So I think that is important for like the higher tier quantum to see relative choices for your potential buyers, right? So if you are owning something that is highly replaceable, like people want to skip this segment, then it is time to restructure. If you are owning a property that is very rare and people will want to skip towards your segment, then if I say I do not have any specific plan to need to move, I will hold out for a little bit to enjoy this gain in momentum from the other segments building over. So it's always a matter of the price point of that bedroom type that you're owning for your district. So for example, 2-bedders, if today in the resale market, anything that is like $1.2 million and below, right, will clear really fast. Why? Because a 2-bed, 2-bath in the new launch market, OCR is minimally $1.55 million. RCR is 1.75, 1.8 million. So in relative aspect, because of that price gap of 500K difference, then the resale thing will move very fast. However, let's say yeah, I'm in the district, and somehow my 2-bed 2-bath is at like 1.45 million and then the new launch is only at 1.5 million. Then of course, then it will make the new launch one more attractive. So it's always on like a relative gameplay. So that is all according to like 3-bedroom, 4-bedroom. But I think what is consistent is 1-bedroom new launch very tough to move lah in the coming years as a form of investment. Yeah. So I think it's important to stick to the right quantum. And we have actually have absorption rate charts where we sort of like monitor in each district how fast are the inventory being digested by the market. So that also helps us to determine where should we go to if we want to have a certain bedroom type from an investment angle. And it also helps to analyze if I own a certain property in this particular district, I know probably maybe I will need 6, 12 months or 15 months to actually exit if I want to take action now. So that actually helps to adjust expectation a bit better.
Joanne, what about yourself? Thanks, Yurong.
Yeah, I think just now Yurong also pointed out something that stood out to me is that 1-bedroom is definitely is something that is harder to exit, which is why I think we are also seeing developers then move away from 1-bedroom configuration in their product mix when they launch. For example, I think Hill Haven, Hillview area, that's something, even though you're 5 minutes close to the MRT, something that maybe traditionally investors might also like. But you see that in terms of the unit mix, they're also launching only 2 to 4 bedrooms. So there's a slight shift that we're noticing. I think moving forward for 2024, in terms of the new launch market, something that is also really important is also in terms of the layout and the floor plan. Pricing is important for sure, but to look at the floor plan, what is something that is very optimized, very efficient, because when you come out to the resale market, be it, you know, 3 years when it TOPs or even 5-10 years down the road, that is still something that will stay, which is a very well thought out floor plan in terms of the layout and all that. It's something that a lot of resale buyers in the market are still hunting for. And at 1.55 million kind of quantum, if you're going for a 2-bed 2-bath, if that's something that, you know, maybe in the new launch that we're going to see this year, if maybe that can only get you a 2-bed 1-bath, your bathrooms don't have any windows, your kitchen don't have any windows, then actually in the resale market, you can still find a very good 2-bed 2-bath with a yard above your shopping mall, above your MRT, at a very, very good quantum, which I think is still a very good comparison.
What project are you referring to? It seems like, wow, like,
it's like, what project is that? I'm trying to do subtle advertising.
No, I'm not.
She referring to her listing. Like,
Wow, this is not a sponsored episode.
In today's market, right? 2x2x, very, very rarely you get to see a yacht.
Which project can you share?
Cannot lah, this is not a sponsor.
She's purposely baiting you to ask that question. So, oh,
no. No, maybe we cut out lah. Just want to know lah.
It is not that
anyway,
I want to
have a look at this. Have a look at this. This is unsold completed condos and apartments as of the year 2022. Actually, just look, have a look. 121 is like super little.
This is completed.
Yeah. So it's like, it could be those like...
Completed means as in they already reached the
TOP.
So these are usually all your mainly your CCR properties. Like, yeah. They are still unsold.
Yeah, I think it's like really like my minute difference. Okay. Joanne, I want to ask you this question.
Yeah.
So if you are a buyer this year.
Okay.
Will you buy a new launch or a resale?
When you ask, what's her profile? Is she a Peter or is she a John or she's a Mary?
It's not a profile.
I mean, like, let's say the profile is that you.
Do I have
you
my own place of stay right now?
No, okay. Let's say you sold a HDB already, MOP.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sold already. So done already.
Okay, so basically sold already. I don't have any other place to stay lah.
Yeah, and you want to buy either a new launch or a resale lah. Condo, what would you like?
I think definitely my first thought is to steer towards resale because I don't want to, even though I mean rental now has, you know, it's not so crazy, has come down a bit, but I want to be in the market earlier. So I would go for resale, and if I can do one name, I would do that. So at least it saves I have the option in future, again in the next few years to come, if I see any good opportunity that comes out in the new launch, then that can be my investment arm. But at least I want to secure my own stay property first, and I don't want to go out to rent because I just want to be in the market, and I don't want to, whatever cost that I am expending outright, I want that to go into my principal instead of going to another person's.
So you go for resale because partly also because of the rental reason.
Rental reason.
If you go to
a
new launch, you have to rent.
Yes, yes. And I want to enter the market now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then your second property with the other name of your spouse, will you go for a new launch or resale?
Then that depends what are the opportunities in the market, right? If the resale at that time is at an all-time high, and then the new launches are in areas that I personally believe in the location and in the future transformation of that area, then I'm okay to enter because I don't mind the waiting timeline.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do you have any like bias on new launch or resale, or actually it's more about like which location, which project and stuff?
Yeah,
like
for the investment part, not biased. But for the own sale, of course, it's just a matter of time like, that I want to secure a place that I can move in immediately. So definitely not the new launches. But for investment, not biased. It's really just down to the numbers and the technical analysis is one thing, which is important. But even though it's an investment property for me, I think my own perspective and belief of that transformation in that area and the convenience and amenities and all that will also still come into play.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, let's round out this episode by just asking everyone one question, right? So that you all share your thoughts with the audience. So let's say by the end of this year, if the PPI goes up by single digit, anything from 3, 4, 5, 6, 7%, that's scenario number one.
Mm.
Versus scenario number two is that the PPI starts to dip. It starts to like be negative at the end of the year. Let's say landed minus 4%. Mm. CCR, RCR, OCR averagely minus 2-3% by the end of the year. What is your personal take on this using the lens of an existing property owner as well as thinking from a point of view like should you go in and buy or should you sell? Like what should you do? I mean, how do you view this and how will this affect your decision? Let's come from a lens as a consumer, as an existing person that owns a property, a private property, or landed property. Like, do you think when you see a dip, right, you want to come in and buy, or when you see a dip, you want to faster sell before you dip further? Because both sets will have different decision matrix, ma, right? It's going to affect you, or it might not affect you. Yeah, what do you guys think? Maybe George can start first.
Okay, so my take is this. I always go by this mantra that if the market is going down or if you are fearing of like recession, then all the more you need to hold on to a real estate because that's an asset and that can protect you. So if let's say property price index were to like dip like, you know, minus 3 or 4%, I won't rush into selling. And if let's say I have additional funds, maybe I have another free names, I have additional funds, probably this persona, then I will still want to buy into a real estate and then I will just hold on to it. So yeah, my short answer is I won't sell. In fact, I will just hold on to it.
So when price dip, you will not sell?
Yeah, won't sell.
Will you buy?
If I have the funds and I have the name, yes, I will buy.
Okay, then if price goes up?
Buy lah. Of course.
Price go down, buy. Price go up, buy. Just
look, if let's say the price
down, buy. Price go up, also buy.
Yeah, why not?
So you will never sell. You will just accumulate more.
Yeah, I will just accumulate more.
Okay,
great. Because for George, right, basically he believes in the fundamental of Singapore real estate. So he doesn't really care on a year-to-year basis what is the up and down. So I think maybe that's how I help to, because in case the audience think they're overly bullish, I help to explain George's mindset.
Okay, good. Thanks, George. Yurong, what about you? If price goes up?
Okay, I think it depends. Number one, for own stay, families who are own stay, right, actually, irregardless of the movement of price index up or down, it doesn't really matter to them because they would not have the intention to sell. They need to be there. I think what matters is for people who have plans in their head, whether, you know, like they are trying to upgrade or they are trying to, you know, like right size their portfolio, then that price index matters to them. So there are a lot of buyers that start to see and read a lot of the recession news, right? And they say, oh yeah, I want to wait because the price will come down. But of course, these are not my buyers. So they're just people who come and see my listings, right? So I think that will depend on what is the quantum that you're looking at. If you're looking at a certain bedroom type where you are at the base quantum level, the longer you wait, the higher the price you have to pay. But if you are telling me that today you are looking at the bedroom type where you are at the upper tier of the quantum, potentially, yes, you might be able to see some pullback or minor correction that you are able to take advantage of, right? But I will say that potentially from a risk-reward angle, whatever dip, it is too minute to risk that potential price movement upwards. So I would say that in general sense, I've shared a lot of times, like we have case studies where my past clients, whether the property price index is, even if it's going down, you know, we are buying in 2014, it went down for the next 3 years, this investment is still profitable. And it's good profitability. And the rationale why is because the property price index do not define your success of your property investment. What defines the success of your property investment is the correct unit selection and entry price. That specific unit that you really commit to. So I think all in all, if today I'm a answer back to your question, I'm a buyer, if the price come down, sometimes the buyer will want to wait some more because they think the price will come down further. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thanks. How about Joanne?
For me, I prioritize my own state happiness. So if it's, you know, it depends on the seasons of life, right? That's another framework that you talk about. Mm. I think for me, I prioritize what my family needs. If it is a stage where it is time to move, maybe because of kids' school or to move closer to parents, to take care of them, etc., the PPI movements won't affect my decision so much. But rather, whether or not, let's say, that area that I'm eyeing on, is there a suitable sort of a unit size that I'm looking for? The floor plan, does it make sense? And of course, the other sort of locational and attributes in terms of the lifestyle, that is what I would prioritize. So in general, movements in PPI won't affect my decision, but more of my seasons of life. What stage am I in? Am I downsizing? Am I in a stage where I can upgrade? So on and so forth. Yeah.
Okay, great. Awesome. Thanks. All right. We hope that you enjoyed this episode with us on property price index and wishing that everybody had a great start to 2024. Yeah. All right, so we'll see you on the next NOTG Banter episode, which will be Ask Us Anything. And meantime, take care. Bye.